Okay, so let's begin. So, last time we went through the Yerushalmi, and we noted, based on all the assumptions we had in the Bavli, that really there are many ways of reading that Yerushalmi, le-maskana. And we noted, right, you could theoretically assume that the Yerushalmi thinks that blowing a shofar is a malacha, that seems a little bit odd. You could replace that it was, it's usur according to Yerushalmi, and for some reason in the Mikdash it is nidche, right, it's overridden, and not outside. Now that would require you both to define what is the nature of the isur and why is it overridden in the Mikdash. And then you could go in the direction of saying that this has nothing to do with isur at all, it has to do with mitzvah, that there really is only a mitzvah to begin with, in the Mikdash, maybe in the Mikdash on Shabbos, or something like that. And this may depend on multiple identities. It could be that every time you blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, so there's the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, and then in the Mikdash there's also a mitzvah based on Bamidbar Yod Yod, of it integrating into the Karbanot. And it could be that on Shabbat it's defined according to Yerushalmi as a Yom Zichron Shua without shofar blowing, but the second element, the Mikdash element, still exists in the Mikdash, and that's where we had left off. And I said at the very end of Shir, is that if you want to take the position that according to the Yerushalmi, there is an Isser, not a Malacha, but an Isser to blow the shofar on Shabbat, but that's overridden in the Mikdash, so you need to define what that Isser is, and figure out why it's going to be overridden in the Mikdash. And I threw out at the end that the Rav had a thesis, which I think has, I don't know what just happened, but sirens were going off in the background. I'm going to hope everything's okay. And if it isn't, there's nothing I can do. But the Rav threw out this thesis that the reason it might be usur to blow the shofar on Shabbat is because the shofar, as I said, this is really a shir in of itself, so let's throw out the thesis for the moment, is that the shofar has an aspect in it of tefillah, right? It incorporates into tefillah, it manifests tefillah, it channels tefillah, something like that. It is related to tefillah. And based on that, the Rav argued that there might be a difference between, first of all, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and second of all, the Mikdash and outside the Mikdash. Now, as I said, I did not want you to really go down this rabbit hole during Hachana, but let's try to justify the Rav's thesis, and then I'll tell you my problems with the thesis. And as Gavi noted, yes, it is possible at different points in the year I will give you much longer source sheets. I'm really trying not to, because I think that it's probably a mistake of mine to give you all the makaros that are on my mind, because then you'll just be caught up reading sources and we'll have no time to read or think. So I'm trying not to overwhelm you with sources, but sometimes, nevertheless, I will, I will give you many sources. But let's take a moment and examine this thesis of the Rav, since you guys were interested in taking it up. So let's go here. Okay? So let's take the Rav's thesis that the prohibition to blow the shofar, if it's not a malacha, it has to do with shofar status as tefillah. And tefillah is problematic on Shabbat. So there's two things we got to analyze here, right? One is, if it's a problem, why is it a problem on Shabbat? And two, if it's a problem on Shabbat, why is that a problem not in the Mikdash, right? Why in the Mikdash is that problem waived? The second and a half problem that you have to deal with, and this is where I'm very, very unsure of the Rav, is that the Rav is going to make a certain assumption that equates Shabbat with Shabbat Rosh Hashanah, and that to me is not 100% clear that that is going to be true. It could be, as we've talked about, that Shabbat Rosh Hashanah will become a different identity, and therefore the rules of the game may be different. Rosh Hashanah and Shabbat, Shabbat Rosh Hashanah, however you want to, whichever way you want to do that identity. Now, where does the
The same way that certain tefillah are usher on Shabbat, they're also usher on Chag. So why would it not be usher on Rosh Hashanah on Omi?
Right, so, like I said, this is why I didn't want to fully go down this rabbit hole, because there is good reason to believe that. And, you know, I was like as I said, I was stress makarot organizing, I don't really know, a few days ago. And, you know, before I ran off to the hospital, this is what I had put together. Whatever, since then, I've been going back and forth with one of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU. And yes, Rami, go.
I just to address, I think that there is a difference in regards to like Shabbos and Chag, in terms of like what kind of tefillos we could say, because we do have the concept of saying like the third Yud-Gimel Midos on the Chagim, but that we specifically and that we won't say it on Shabbos.
Correct. So there is a difference between Shabbat and Chag, and there might be even yet more difference between Rosh Hashanah and other Chagim. So this is where it gets complicated. And like I said, today I'll do a little bit more frontal teaching, because I don't want you to get bogged down in these sources. If you want to get bogged down, I'll let you get bogged down. I'm not gonna stop you. But let's look at some of the sources that would develop this thesis of the Rav. Okay. So we start in the Mishnah. Right. The Mishnah in Tanit tells you. Who wants to read the Mishnah? Okay, this is not an overwhelming source.
Okay. Read it. All right, so al elu mit ri'in b'shabbat, al ir she hi kifu goim o na'ar. So for these you blow the shofar on Shabbos for a city that is. Okay, it is sort of surrounded by a goyim or a river. Val has fina amitarem bayam.
Amitarefet bayam, right?
The ship is going down.
Yeah. Okay.
Rabbi Yossi Omer, les ra velo la ta.
Litzeaka.
So is like you do it for help, but not to for a prayer to cry out.
Good. So right off the bat, we have this Mishnah. The Mishnah says, right, and then you have Shimon HaTemani, who says, okay, defer also. Also, there's famine. Fine. The Mishnah very clearly tells you, right, outlines this position, that the blowing of the shofar, which can be, remember, I said this, that this is all going to be based on this. The Mishnah clearly in the background thinks that a shofar has two roles in the context of tzarot. One is it's a call for help, and the other is that it's tefillah, right? That it integrates in some sense into tefillah, or it's a call to tefillah, right? The connection is pretty clear here. And Rabbi Yossi therefore says, on Shabbat, the role of shofar as tefillah cannot be implemented. If you're blowing the shofar because there's a war, right, there's a battle, there's a siege, that's to call for help, but not for tefillah. So the Mishnah clearly tells you that there is some limitation, according to Rabbi Yossi at least, on tefillah on Shabbat. But there's two very subtly different ways of taking this Mishnah. Right? So when Rabbi Yossi says you can't blow the shofar as a form of tefillah on Shabbat, what prohibition might emerge from Rabbi Yossi's statement?
Blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah.
Wait, before we get to that, look, forget Rosh Hashanah for a minute. What is Rabbi Yossi saying? Why can't you blow the shofar for the purpose of tefillah on Shabbat? What is he saying? He could be saying several things, but the nuance is going to be very important here.
Is it?
Well, these might be, but what is he saying, right? He's saying you can't daven. Why?
Because you're allowed to do it to help, because you are saving lives.
Oh, good, right. So you're allowed to do help, but you can't daven. Okay. But why can't you daven? Right? What is he saying? And there's two very, very narrow different. There's two very related points he could be saying, but there's a big halachic nafkamina here.
Well, he could be saying that shofar is certain
jobs. Forget shofar for a second, right? His problem is davening. Shofar, the fact that shofar is linked to it is very helpful for our point purpose. But let's get his prayer point, right? What's his point? What type of tefillah can't you do on Shabbat?
So a cry out.
Okay, good. And what is included in tzaka?
Request.
Something where you're really in pain and you're trying.
Good. So one possibility is the more minimalist position, which is what Rami is saying, is you don't know from this Mishnah that you're not allowed to pray on Shabbat. You know that you can't pray when the prayer is channeling a extreme tragedy, because that extreme desperation is against the theme of Shabbat. But that doesn't necessarily tell you that a less extreme type of prayer would be against the theme of Shabbat. We don't know, right? Meaning, Rabbi Yossi could be making one of two different statements. One is, you're not allowed to pray, meaning request, on Shabbat at all, and therefore, don't blow the shofar to encourage people to pray. Or he could be saying, extreme desperation should not be expressed on Shabbat, but maybe less extreme desperation, right? A regular request or petition would be permitted on Shabbat. We don't know from the Mishnah. Yeah, Yonatan.
I don't see the connection here between shofar and tefillah. I mean,
I didn't say anything about shofar. I didn't say anything about shofar yet. It happens to be that if you know the Mishnah and Tanit, they would blow the shofar, and that would be the announcement that it was time to have a public fast and a public prayer ceremony, etc. Right? There is an implied connection, but it may be pragmatic. It's not clear that it's fundamental, right?
But isn't this Mishnah specifically talking about shofar and not tefillah?
Well, it's the shofar is a call for help and a call to prayer, right? And he says you can call for help, but you can't call for prayer, right? There's a limitation in some sense on prayer. Right, and if you look, right, that's how the Rambam really captures it here in the next source. Right, Asur.
Can you say that he's saying that you can't blow shofar at all on Shabbos unless there are these extenuating circumstances, and that just eliminates the whole connection with tefillah?
Well, but his problem is you can blow the shofar, but you have to make sure that you're using it as a cry to help and not for prayer. Right, I mean, you're blowing the shofar. Right, he's saying matrian. These are the times you can blow the shofar on Shabbat. There's not a limitation. You are blowing it, right? But it's as a call to help, right?
Even on Shabbos, meaning
even on Shabbos, correct?
Circumstances where you would. These are the only times you'd be able.
Correct, and even there. So the question is, even there, you can't pray on Shabbat, or only there you can't pray on Shabbat, right? Right? I mean, which one is he saying? Is he saying when it's extreme, so you can ask for help, but you can't turn to God with extreme desperation on Shabbat? That's against the theme of Shabbat. Or is he saying, no, you can never pray on Shabbat. You can never do any requests. So obviously...
Oh, I see.
Right? Even. Right? Meaning, it could be that it's the extreme nature of this situation that makes it a problem. Or it could be that even though it's extreme, you can't pray. Right, one of those says it's only bad, really bad situations where you can't pray, because then your Shabbos is ruined. Or it could be you can't pray at all, and you might have thought you could pray when you're surrounded by a foreign army, and the answer is no, you can't. Even there, you can't pray. You can get help, but don't pray. Someone chatted it. It's not clear. So the quarantine. This is one of the main sources for the quarantining. Yes. Right, meaning the early sources for quarantining are indeed in well related Gemara and Bava Kamma actually, but yes, so it helped with something.
The question here is really on Shabbos. Can you only sound the shofar for a physical health, like physical health, or can you sound the shofar to try to turn to God?
Right, so you definitely can't do it for the latter, but in this case, but it's not clear why not. Right, I mean, it's not clear, right? And if you look, so you look at the Rambam. The Rambam tells you asur lit anot lizok litchanein l'vakesh rachamim b'shabbat. You can't pray, you can't fast, cry out, supplicate, ask for mercy on Shabbat. Va'afilu b'tzara min atzarot shatzibur metanein u'matrein aleihen ein metanein v'lo metrein b'shabbat. Even if it's a super super big emergency, such that you could be mechal Shabbat to blow the shofar, bring on, you know, aid to battle, even then you aren't allowed to, right? You aren't allowed to invoke prayer. You can't, right? And he says, "V'lo b'yamim tovim chutz meir shikufu ovdei kochavim mazalot u'naharos svinah mitarefet b'yam shematrin alein b'shabbat la'azran v'nchaninu v'akshin alein rachamim." Now, the Rambam seems to perceive that this is where Rabbi Yossi divides, that the Chachamim would allow you, under that Pikuach Nefesh, to daven. Right? The Rabbi Yossi thinks you can't even daven in that circumstance, and the Chachamim allow you. Right? That seems to be how the Rambam views this, that maybe this itself is the Machloket. Yeah, Ezra, just shout out. Go, Ezra.
So, if the prop in, like, there's, like, two possibilities, but if the problem is, like, the intense negative emotion, and that's, like, inconsistent with, like, the spirit of Shabbat, and if that's the only problem, then why is it okay? Like, it's allowed for you to, like, direct that emotion at, like, other people or just to have that in general, but why is it specifically problematic to direct it as God?
So it's not totally clear you can, right? It's not clear you can to other people, right? Meaning the same, as we'll see, the same tradition that says you can't daven on Shabbat as a fundamental prohibition says you can't cry on Shabbat either. Right, meaning there actually is a problem with extreme negative emotions, not just towards God. It's a problem with generating extreme negative emotion or desperate emotion or something like that on Shabbat.
I was blowing a shofar.
We haven't gone to the shofar yet. I'm not at the shofar yet. I mean, I sort of am at the shofar, but I'm not quite there yet. I'll get there. Yeah, Yehonatan.
So according to the Rambam, you would never be able to daven on Shabbos?
Supplicate, right? Remember, here tefillah means supplication, petition, requests. And yes, that is true. You can never do that. Now, this may be a machloket Bavli Yerushalmi, and this is where it gets complicated, okay? So, the Gemara in Brachot tells you as follows, that Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Haya omeid b'tfila v'nizkar shitpalel posek. If you are davening, in general, and you remember that you already davened, you're supposed to stop. V'afil v'emtza bracha. Right? You're davening, you forgot you davened mincha, you're davening mincha regular day, stop in the middle. So the Gemara says, why? When I was by Rabbi Ravua, why? When I was by Rabba Baravua, he said that if someone is davening on Shabbat and forgets and he starts saying Atachonim, Mao Shi Yigmru, is he allowed to finish? And we say you're allowed to finish the bracha. So the context of his question, oh, that was early, was why can't you, if you already daven mincha and now you daven a second mincha, why don't you just finish the bracha just like you would if it's Shabbat and you remembered in the middle of Atachonin that you're not supposed to be saying Atachonin, you're supposed to be saying, right, whatever tefillah you're in, Yismach Moshe, Ata Echad, whatever. So the Gemara answers, Hachi hashta, hatam gavra bar chiyuvahu, v'rabbanan hu delo atrachua mishum kavod Shabbat. On Shabbat, if you start davening a chol shmon esrei, you are really obligated in davening a weekday shmon esrei, but the rabbis didn't want to burden you. So they made shmon esrei shorter, because the ikar of tefillah is only ever, right, the Amidah. And the Amidah during the week is 18, now 19 brachot, and on Shabbat, it's only 7. Aval hacha, but during the week, hatzalilei, the reason we don't let you continue in your tefillah is you already davened. Yes, there's a problem, aren't you allowed to do voluntary tefillah? Yes, but you didn't enter into this as a voluntary tefillah. Okay. Gavi is right. But simple implication of the Bavli. Are you allowed to daven on Shabbat? Petition. Right? By davening, I mean petition, request.
Yeah.
Yes. How do you know? Because Gemara says, fundamentally, you should be allowed to daven on Shabbat. It's just, it's too long, so we don't make you do it. But if you already started, so continue. No problem. Now, admit it. Honestly, there is a position of the Rush that maybe this is only the first bracha. It's only Atachonin because wisdom is different. Let's leave that aside. Okay? According to the Bavli, how would you read the Mishnah and Tanit? Right, the Mishnah and Tanit clearly put some sort of limitation on prayer on Shabbat. So how would you read it if, according to the Bavli, you're allowed to petition on Shabbat? So what is the Mishnah in Tanit telling you?
That it's something extraordinary?
Correct. Right, the simplest understanding of the Bavli is that you're allowed to daven, make normal requests on Shabbat, but extreme requests, that would be problematic. That's against the theme of Shabbat. But according to the Bavli, it seems to be that you're allowed to make requests on Shabbat from God. The Yerushalmi says...
According to the Bavli, saying the weekday Shema on Shabbos, would that actually... if you
Shema is not a request. Shema is not a request.
The weekday Shemona Esrei, rather.
Right. Tefillah, remember, always means the Shemona Esrei, and it means request in Chazal. Yeah, the weekly Shemona Esrei, yeah.
If you felt it wouldn't burden you, would you be able to say that, or would you even be encouraged to say that on Shabbos?
So you're not encouraged to, but if you did, you did, and you can continue. Meaning, no one thinks you should, right? That's not what Chazal instituted, but there doesn't seem to be a fundamental problem, right? And therefore, if you already started, so continue. The Yerushalmi seems not to say that. And if you look at the Yerushalmi in the 15th parak of Shabbat, the Yerushalmi says, Tani... Asur l'tvoat tzrachav b'Shabbat. It is prohibited to ask what you need on Shabbat. And then the Gemara says, Rabbi Zeira Sha'al Rabbi Chia Barba, Mahu Meima Ra'inu Parnasenu. Are you allowed to, in davening, include the phrase, right, give us sustenance? And he says, yeah, whatever. Amar Lei Tovas Brachot Kachech. Yeah. That was already part of the bracha. Don't worry about one phrase here. It's already integrated into the bracha. Don't worry about that little phrase. Very complicated how to understand that Yerushalmi. But the simple understanding is that according to the Bavli, you're allowed to request on Shabbat. We don't make you do it. But there's no fundamental problem. The Yerushalmi says, Usher, you're not allowed to make requests on Shabbat. So here's where the Rav's thesis came in. Right? That the Rav, and again, this is not fully, I gave you the piece from Rav Shechter, but I heard from Rav Savolovsky a little bit clearer, and I think, right, this is what, right, or a little bit more expansive, is that maybe if you think that shofar in some way represents an act of prayer, right, as is already somewhat implied in the Mishnah and Tanit, right? So then what the Rav argued was that maybe if shofar is a din in prayer, so look, according to the Bavli, fundamentally you're allowed to petition God on Shabbat. So it's not usur. And therefore it's only usur midirabanan. But the Yerushalmi thinks that making a petitionary prayer on Shabbat is prohibited. And therefore, if the shofar has a din tvila, right, in some way expresses our petitionary request to God, so then you're not allowed to blow it on Shabbat. Why then can you do it in the mikdash? Right? Meaning, that's going to be the million-dollar question, is that why is the mikdash different? So, if you look for a second what I WhatsApp to you, one second, I'll pull it up. I have to turn it somehow. Can I do that on WhatsApp? Probably not.
According to the Yerushalmi, would you still allow to blow the shofar on Shabbos in those extenuating circumstances in the Mishnah?
Potentially. Right? Potentially. Let me pull up this piece. One second. Here. Let's pull this up. Now, according to this, though, why is it that you can... I can't turn this, can I? Here, try this one. Yeah. Okay. So then why then would you be allowed to blow it in the mikdash? Right? So if it's usher, why would you be allowed to do it in the mikdash? So, what he writes is as follows. Here. Right. Vahatchina asurahi b'Shabbat chutz mi b'Mikdash. Right. Blow tefillah is asur in the Mikdash except for on Shabbat. Why? Because besides the fact that Mikdash is defined as the place where you bring karbanot, hugam ken makom atfila, it is defined as the place of prayer. Kidichdiv ki beiti veit tfila yikare lechol ha'amim. The pasuk says it is a place of prayer. So therefore, what he suggests is that if the Beit HaMikdash is defined as a place of prayer, then maybe the normal isser of asking requests on Shabbat doesn't apply in the Mikdash. And therefore, it's usher to blow the shofar outside the Mikdash because of the isser to pray. But in the Mikdash, where there's no isser to pray because it's defined as a makon of tefillah, and therefore even on Shabbat, prayer is in line with the themes of Shabbat, so therefore it's mutter to blow the shofar. That's the Rav's thesis.
Why wouldn't that apply to like any shul?
So every shul is only a pale reflection of the Mikdash. Again, a sugya for another time is the relationship based on the sugyas and Megillah. I can send you the source sheet I gave when I gave share on this last summer. Feels like a long time ago. But if I remember correctly, there were at least 52 makarot on that source sheet. Might take you a little bit of time. It was a fun share, but it was like a 3-hour slot or something. Okay, so this was the Rav's thesis. Okay, I'll tell you very quickly my thought process on why I'm not convinced by this. Okay, it might be right, but I'm not 100% convinced here. Okay, first of all, it's not clear to me that there is a machloket Bavli Yerushalmi. And many Rishonim did not believe that there was a machloket Yerushalmi. And they thought that the Yerushalmi, that the Bavli fundamentally agreed with the Yerushalmi, and they didn't think that the answer in the Bavli was to exclude the fundamental value of the Yerushalmi that you're not allowed to daven. So, for example, right, if you look at this tshuva of the Rambam in Reish Chet, he was asked, again, I'm going to run through this because I didn't cut it down for you because this was my own. These were my own notes. He was asked whether you were allowed to say, Ma yomar adoneinu bidvar amirat tfilah ktana shechiber Rabbeinu Saadia Gaon Zal v'katav ota l'shabbatot l'moadim v'imei simcha. Rav Saadia Gaon wrote a petitionary prayer for Shabbat. Do you think it's mutter or not? Now, already, as Mori v'Rabbi Rav Lichtenstein noted, why do you think Rav Saadia Gaon wrote a petitionary prayer for Shabbat if it's usher? So what does it seem like for Rav Saadia Gaon? The Rav Saadia Gaon thought it probably was a machloket Bavli Yerushalmi. That the Bavli thought you were allowed to daven, ask for things on Shabbat. It's just that Shmona Esrei is too long. And therefore he wrote a small little petition to say on Shabbat, no big deal. Right? The Rav Saadia Gaon probably thought there was a machloket Bavli Yerushalmi. But the Rambam doesn't think this. And he says, if you skip down to his answer, he says, no. That prayer, V'chein elu ha-piyutim anikrem rachamim anemarim b'mei ha-tshuva, that piyut and any other piyut, ein yodeh shum panim lomar achareim kadish, ve'elu ha-tchinot kulana bakashot, v'atfilot v'forsamot mechibirei gaonim zal v'apaitanim, all those petitionary prayers the gaonim wrote for Shabbat, asur lomar davar mehen b'shum panim, it's prohibited. Lo liachid, lo litzibur, lo lishabbat, v'lo lemoed. Not a community, not an individual, not on Shabbat, not on Chag. The fish chachamim zal hikpidu shlo lo damar davar ayoter katan min zeh zug b'Shabbat. Because Chazal said it's usher to daven like this on Shabbat. And if you skip down, he says u'bishvil zeh u'shmetu abrachot emtziot shel shmona asrei. And that's why we don't say a full shmona asrei on Shabbat. So the Rambam clearly doesn't see a fundamental machloket Bavli in Yerushalmi because he paskins kaneh like the Yerushalmi. And many other Rishonim are like this. Many other Rishonim are like this. Right? Rashi is like this, Machzor Vitri. So first of all, I'm not convinced there is a machloket Bavli Yerushalmi. The second is that it's not clear that the same thing would apply when Shabbat and Rosh Hashanah collide. And that's what the Rivash says. The Rivash writes that there was a minhag in many places. Ma'u lomar avinu malkenu b'shabbat shebein Rosh Hashanah liyom ha-kippurim. Or you let us say avinu malkenu on Shabbat Shuva. So he says, Yesh misha omer she'ein lomro devein shu tchina bein shu she'ela tzrachim ein lomro b'shabbat klal. Some people said, don't do it because it's petition on Shabbat. Vafilu b'Rosh Hashanah v'yom ha-kippurim shechal b'Shabbat katvu k'tzat min ha-achronim she'ein lomro. And even on Rosh Hashanah, many people don't say it. Even if it's Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat, v'kol she'ein b'Shabbat shuva. But he says, v'yesh mishomer she'yesh lomro. Some say you are allowed to say it. So in his question, he says, you should be lenient and follow the minhag. Why? And he says, because on Rosh Hashanah and maybe on Yom Kippur, you're allowed to say it. Because, im lo achshav eimatai, because if not now, when? And he says, v'zeu she'amru b'Yerushalmi tani asur l'shol tzrachav b'Shabbat, that which the Yerushalmi says you can't make requests on Shabbat, so skipping down, he says, here, I'll just find the key line. It's a long tshuva. You know what? Okay. You can even just look at the summary here in the Ron. The Ron just says that even though it's... Well, you know what? Now, let me try to find it. He says, even though it's true in general, that the Yerushalmi says you're not allowed to daven on Shabbat, he says that might be true... That might not be true on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Right? That might not be true on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur because Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur might change the nature of the days. And therefore, you might be allowed to make requests on Rosh Hashanah in the fall and Shabbat. Because Rosh Hashanah, you're allowed to make requests. And the Ron says the same thing. And he says... Right, it might be that Rosh Hashanah is different. Right, that Rosh Hashanah is different. And the clearest version of this is the Magen Avot of the Meiri, where he says, "Masha anu noagim lomar avinu malkenu b'Shabbat shel Rosh Hashanah v'Seret Yemei Tshuva." Why are you allowed to say? Why was his minhag to say avinu malkenu on Shabbat, even on Rosh Hashanah shechal yod b'Shabbat? Why on Shabbat? You're not allowed to do that. Heyach atem mitbalim b'Shabbat tefila shel she'ilat tzrachav shel adam. Right, how are you allowed to make requests on Shabbat? So he says, even though it's true that normally you're not allowed to make requests on Shabbat, it might be different here. V'nahagu harbei min hagaonim v'chasidim litanot b'Rosh Hashanah v'chiyuv chal b'Shabbat. We know that Rosh Hashanah might be different. V'chein v'Shabbat shel Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Some of the Gaonim fasted on Rosh Hashanah, even if it was on Shabbat. And even on Shabbat Shuva, they would fast on Shabbat. And he says, V'af al pi sh'anu cholkim b'inyan ha-ta'anit. Even though we think you're not allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah, b'inyanai ha-tfilot mia af anu modim b'kach. We half agree with the Gaonim. We think that Rosh Hashanah has too much simcha to allow you to fast. But we think it doesn't have enough simcha to prevent you from making requests. And that's true even on Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yod B'Shabbat, because the hybrid of Rosh Hashanah and Shabbat makes it that you're actually allowed to make requests. Shiyamim elu lo netnu el lahachna'a u'shvira yetzer. These days are defined as days when you're supposed to break down your Yetzahara and submit yourself to God. And therefore, it is mutter to make requests on Shabbat, on Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yod B'Shabbat. Right, so my second reason for not being convinced, right, my first reason for not being convinced by the Rav's Bavli Yerushalmi distinction is that many Rishonim think that the Bavli agrees you're not allowed to pray on Shabbat, in which case there's no difference between the Bavli and Yerushalmi. The second is many Rishonim thought that even if in general you aren't allowed to make requests on Shabbat, on Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbat, you are allowed to. And therefore, to say that you're not allowed to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shechal Yod B'Shabbat, because you're not allowed to pray on Shabbat, or make requests on Shabbat, and the shofar is a din of tefillah, right? I can push back on that in at least two ways. At least two, right? Yes, Yonatan?
According to the last thing we just read, is shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah just mutter, or is there an obligation of it?
Good, so I'll come back to that in a minute, okay? Hold that thought. Now, I will note that many people disagreed with this. The Gra, for example, was very insistent that Rosh Hashanah is a full simcha. One of the nafkaminas that Rabbi Vadya deals with at length is, are you allowed to cry on Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yod B'Shabbat, where Rabbi Vadya thinks that lahalacha, even though you might not be allowed to cry in general, you might be allowed to cry in tefillah on Shabbat, because we really do paskin that Rosh Hashanah transforms Shabbat into a day when you're allowed to cry, at least if it's part of the because of the fear of din, right? So there are a lot of related points here. In at least one source, I found that the exact opposite of this, in one of the Achronim, and this is what I, yeah, in the Sefer Tshuat Melech, he thinks that there is no mitzvah of simcha on Shabbat, on Rosh Hashanah, except in the Mikdash, because you're bringing karbanot. Now, if that's true, then this whole analysis makes no sense, because in the Mikdash, it's dafka, a happier place. And if the shofar manifests sadness, then it should be less mutter in the Mikdash than outside the Mikdash, which would throw the Rav's analysis completely on its head. So for those three reasons, I'm not convinced by the Rav's thesis. So like I said, I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole here. I'm not convinced by the Rav's thesis. I think it's interesting. But I have several reasons to doubt it. It's not impossible, but I'm not fully convinced by the theme. Okay, with that aside, and without getting you too much into this, because I've already gotten you 40 minutes into this, into my aside on my thoughts of the Rav, let's go back to Yonatan's point, which is that all of this assumed that it was an Isser, right? It could just be, right, that it's usher outside, it's a mitzvah in the Mikdash. It could just be that it's mutter, right? Or maybe the Rav's whole analysis only works on the assumption that it's mutter. Maybe you don't need any of this because the real focus is mitzvah, right? As we've mentioned before, in which case, right, there are many other ways of going about this. So let me make the point I originally wanted to make before we, you know, followed this aside that you wanted to follow, is lehalacha, how much do we actually accept the Bavli? Or we accept the Bavli. More precisely, how much do we actually reject the Yerushalmi? Okay? So this is where things get interesting. Because if you'd asked me, I would have said, look, obviously we accept the Bavli over the Yerushalmi. Right? And if we accept the Bavli over the Yerushalmi, so then why don't we blow the shofar on Shabbat? Right, what does the Bavli think?
It's a malacha.
No, the Bavli doesn't think it's a malacha. The Bavli thinks it's mutter totally. It's exerid derabanan because Shema Yavirenu.
Valid amos.
Right, exactly. So according to the Bavli, is there any difference on a fundamental biblical level between Rosh Hashanah during a weekday and Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat?
No.
No, not at all. What throws a monkey wrench into that thesis is that even though we may paskin this way, what do we do? Do we paskin halacha lemaisa that throws into question whether we actually believe what we just said?
I
And this is back to the original source sheet that I actually wanted to look at, right? Which was, what do we do on davening that's very surprising? Here. Yeah. Someone read it. Someone read it. Who has not read yet? Yaakov, you have not read yet. Or Yaakov, if you're will, you're muted and I don't see you, so this makes it. Oh, there you are. Yaakov, you want to take it? You haven't read yet. So here, read Shulchan Aruch. Take it away. You thought I forgot about you, but I didn't. I should note, by the way, I understand sometimes it can be overwhelming to be called on. When I was in Ruach HaChatzin Shir, that was what we dreaded more than anything, was being called on. Ever. Like, it was like the worst nightmare ever when he called on you. So I get it, but I try not to be as scary. So let's just read this one line in Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, take it away. Here, Tavkuf Pei Beis Zayin.
I am called B'chol, at Rosh Hashanah on the weekday. Amar Yom Teruah Mikra Kodesh. We say Yom Teruah is a Mikra Kodesh. And Chol B'Shabbos Amar Zikron Teruah. And Fell on Shabbos, we say it's a remembrance of the Teruah.
Ah, okay. So now somebody tell me. Does that make sense according to the Yerushalmi?
Yes.
100%. Because whichever of the 6 or 7 possibilities we said in the Yerushalmi, according to the Rishonim, is there a fundamental biblical difference between the identity of the day of Rosh Hashanah during the week and Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos?
Yes.
So to reflect that in Tefillah is great. But according to the Bavli, that biblically there's no difference, so why would you... Right? Remember, the Bavli rejected the notion that Truah versus Zichron Truah describes two different types of Rosh Hashanahs. It's all Xerah D'Rabba. It's all about carrying. It has nothing to do with the identity of Rosh Hashanah. So why would we reflect it in Tefillah? So what would you think, right? What might this indicate already?
Asmachta.
So one possibility is, you're right, we accept it, but it's a nice asmachta. Totally fine. Good. But
we don't hold like the Bavli.
So, or we don't hold like the Bavli. You could say that. That would be a very big chiddush, right? But, well, you know what? Let me give you one more source that is even weirder than what we just read, and then we'll try to understand it. Okay? Here's the Beit Yosef. Okay? Who wants to continue reading? Yaakov, you want to continue reading? You can say no. You have read, you have been Yotze. You can throw it to somebody else. But if you want to, you continue in the Beit Yosef. Oh, Adam wants to read. Or he has a question.
Just where are we? Because I'm trying to look along on my computer.
Oh, sorry. We're at the Beit Yosef. So this was on the original source sheet. Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat Part 1. At the bottom of page 4.
Yeah.
Got it?
The original source sheet?
The original one, yeah. Not this addendum that I didn't want to give you in the first place. Yes, the original one. Sorry.
Okay.
So, if you look at the Beit Yosef says, why do we do this? So he quotes the Rush, who quotes Masechet Sofrim. Right, this is a direct quote of Masechet Sofrim. If you want, you can look it up, but it's a direct quote. V'imchal Rosh Hashanah liyot b'Shabbat, eino omer yom truah, ela zichron truah. Right, when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat, you don't say yom truah, you say zichron truah. L'fi She'ein tkiat shofar doche et haShabbat bigvulin, because blowing the shofar does not override Shabbat outside the Beit HaMikdash, mishum gzeira, because of the gzeira. Someone explain that completely ununderstandable, inscrutable sentence to me. Someone explain to me the Masechet Sofrim that the Beit Yosef quoted as the basis of our minhag and davening. Because it is very, very weird. What does he say? Go ahead, Andrew. You look like you want to give it a try.
He seemed to say that because of a gezerah, you say zichron truah, which is weird. You say, use a gezerah to say which pasuk you use.
Yeah, well, it seems like he's mixing the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. And Masechet Sofrim, for the record, is a mid-Gaonic work. Like 8th century or something like that, which is one of the Masechto Ketana. We don't know, so it has like Talmudic material in it, but it's Gaonic. And it seems like, even though we've said until now that the Bavli and Yerushalmi are completely at odds, the Masechet Sofrim has this very bizarre line that it says, oh, we say Trua versus Zichron Trua because it quotes a pasuk, which sounds like the Yerushalmi, that there's a fundamental difference between the right Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat and Rosh Hashanah during the week. And then it says, and why are they different? Because of a gzeira, because of a technical decree. So which is it? Right? Which is it? Is Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat fundamentally different than a Rosh Hashanah during the weekday? Or are they the same and there happens to be a technical gzeira because we're worried about carrying? Which one is it? Right? The Mechzechet Sofrim is so bizarre. So, one possibility is to say what Ezra said, which is, okay, I think it was Ezra, though I didn't, I think it was Ezra who said it, which is, it's whatever, don't get too caught up on it, it's an asmachta, yeah, it's all derabanan. But like, okay, once it's derabanan, so hang it on a pasuk, but fundamentally, we totally agree with the Bavli, right? Rosh Hashanah during the week is exactly identical to Rosh Hashanah Shabbat. Why do we, the only reason not to blow the shofar is gzeira. Why do we change davening? Because we happen not to be blowing the shofar on Shabbat, so whatever, we, you know, we tack on this distinction in tefillah as like a, you know, a nice added asmachta, throw in a hint to the Yerushalmi, but it doesn't really mean anything. We don't really mean it. Okay? That's one possibility. What's the other possibility? The other possibility is to somehow synthesize the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Right? How would you do that? And here, Yehonatan, I'm putting you on the spot because you didn't realize that you've hinted at the possible answers, but let's see if we can get it, if I can pull it out of you, okay? Good. So try to synthesize it for me. How can you say that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi are not as far apart as we thought they were?
I don't know.
Okay, so you said something very, very clever. You said, wait a second. Are you not allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat?
Oh.
Or is it just mutter? Are you not allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat?
Blow the shofar on Shabbat.
So now, with that, tease out an answer for me.
So is it, if it's only mutter, but not necessarily prohibited, the difference is whether or not there's an obligation to blow, not whether or not it's prohibited to blow.
Very good. Right? Meaning, you could read Yerushalmi as follows. The difference between Shabbat and not Shabbat is not whether you have to blow the shofar. It's whether it's permitted. Right? It's whether it's permitted. Sorry. Let me try that again. It's not whether it's permitted. It's permitted. Right? Other way around. It's permitted to blow the shofar on Shabbat. The question is whether you need to blow the shofar on Shabbat. Right? Is whether you need it. You're allowed to. There's no problem. The question is whether you need to. And what? So maybe if you think whether Yerushalmi is saying, look, everyone agrees you're allowed to blow the shofar on the Shabbat. The question is mitzvah. And what is the Yerushalmi saying? Outside the Beit HaMikdash, you don't need to. Why? You're allowed to celebrate Rosh Hashanah as a Zichron Trua, without an actual Trua. In the Mikdash, because the shofar integrates into the Karbanot, you have to blow the shofar. Then, what might the Bavli be saying? The Bavli might not be arguing with the Yerushalmi. What might it be saying? Or not fully. Is, on Shabbat, there's no mitzvah to blow the shofar. Once there's no mitzvah, then what?
There's no obligation.
And if there's no obligation, it makes sense to do what?
To not blow.
Because of Gzeira D'Rabba. Meaning, Rabba may have been building on the Yerushalmi. Meaning, it might be that Rabba is saying, look, if there was a mitzvah to blow the shofar, I would never tell you not to blow just because you might end up carrying. But if you paskin like the Yerushalmi, that there's no mitzvah, it's just an option, so then, when it's only an option, I'm more likely to wipe it away because of an extraneous concern. And therefore, maybe Rabbah is actually building on the Yerushalmi and saying, It's a Yom Zichron Trua. You are allowed to express Rosh Hashanah as a day of commemoration without an actual shofar blowing. But outside the Mikdash, because of the concern that you might carry, we tell you not to avail yourself of that option. Because once it's only an option, it's not worth risking carrying our Bamot B'Shur D'Rabim. So that's one suggestion given in the Achronim. And that would explain why we do Paskin as Gzira D'Rabba, but it's not actually a full Machloket Bavli in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is telling you why you don't have to blow, and the Bavli is telling you why you don't take advantage of the option and forbid it. But it's building on the Yerushalmi, and therefore, in fact, we do maintain that there's a fundamental difference between Rosh Hashanah and Shabbat and Rosh Hashanah during the week. The second possibility brought up in the Achronim, very quickly, is that, and this is even more radical, I think, which is, no, you think Rabba says it's a gzera like it's Dirabbanan? No, and this I did not expect you to get, because this is very mechudash, and I'm not sure I'm convinced of it at all, but it is brought in the Achronim. Actually, in the Achronim and sort of in the Rishonim also. Maybe Rabba doesn't mean gzera. Maybe he means that God himself forbade blowing shofar on Shabbat and made it into a Zichron Trua because God was worried you might carry Arba Amot Rishud Arabim. And this is actually the reason for the drasha of the Yerushalmi. That happens to be a wild chiddush. I did not expect you to predict that one coming. But very quickly, I will just show you inside where this comes up because I don't expect you to take my word on what I just said because it's very, very, very mechudash. Let me pull it up for a second on my screen. Here. So, if you look at this very surprising source, I'm having trouble pulling it up. Here we go. So here is an Italian Rishon, the Tanya Rabbati. And he says, Yesh makshin, lama lan gzera de Rabba, hatrei kroi ktive. Why do you need the gzera of Rabba? There are two psukim, zichron truv yom trua. Umukminan chad b'shabbat v'chad b'chol. And he says, umifarshinan de Rabba gufe, mifarish lehu likroi. Rabba isn't saying it's a gzera. He's telling you that's what the pasuk means. Va'amar my taima amar kra zichron trua. And he's saying, why did God himself say it's only a zichron trua? Mishum d'shema yelech etzel baki lilmod. Because God was worried that you might walk with the shofar, and therefore gzera de Rabba is not actually a gzera. It's God. It's Rabba telling you what he thinks God wanted. From defining Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat is one thing, and Rosh Hashanah during Chol is another, and that's how he synthesizes the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. And like I said, it's quite mechudash. It happens to be that it's a Rishon, right? It's the Tanya Rabbati, which is Rabbi Yechiel ben Yekutiel Harofe. He was an Italian Rishon from the 13th century. So it is a wild position, and it's quoted in the Achronim as well. It's quoted by the Gilyone Ashas of Rabbi Yosef Engel. So, to summarize that just quickly, right? Again, we assumed until now there was a Machloket Bavli Yerushalmi. The problem with saying there's a Machloket Bavli Yerushalmi is that even though we seem to pasken like the Bavli is only Yesen Rida Rabbanan, we reflected in Tfilah, and Masechet Sofrim seems to synthesize the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. So two ways of synthesizing it. One is the way that Tanya Rabbati does, which is to say, Rabba doesn't really mean Midirabbanan. He's saying the same as the Yerushalmi, but he's explaining what God himself wanted. The other is the way Yehonatan was sort of getting at, is maybe the Yerushalmi is explaining why there's no mitzvah to blow, and the Bavli is telling you why you don't take advantage of the heter to blow. Right? Meaning there it is only Zichron Trua. You can only do it through Tvila without blowing the shofar. And because we're worried you might carry. So that's why we tell you to not take advantage of that heter. Again, that's also quite mechudash. that shita is quoted in the Shibole Haleket. Sorry, the Shibole Haleket says the same as the Tanya Rabati. They're both Italian Rishonim. Other Achronim suggest that maybe it's just is what we said based on what Yonatan said, that it's only a heter, not a right. And the Bavli is explaining why you don't take advantage of that heter. Okay, Andrew, you have a question? Yeah, go.
Yeah, didn't we learn this idea about God telling the expecting the gzera of the carrying?
Because yes, right. So a middle good. So Andrew's right. Then a middle way of saying this is the way Ezra said this.
Sora.
Correct. A middle way of saying this is the way Ezra said before, which is the ritvaz asmachta. That it's not that God commanded it, but that every asmachta does reflect some sort of mid-level God's will, and therefore it makes sense. Yes, 100%. The third way of taking it is the way we suggested earlier, based on Ezra's invoking of the Ritva in Rosh Hashanah Tet Zayin. 100%. Right? Meaning that God didn't really forbid it, but the Asmachta does reflect some sort of mid-level actual intent of the Torah. Not the actual intent, right? And not the intent at all, but something in the middle called Asmachta. That would be another way of defending it. 100%. Okay, that was a bit complicated. I hope it was clear. We only have 2 days before you go on the Tiul. So let's try to at least cover one of the two other topics that we said we were going to discuss within the Sugya. I think the one we're going to start with was the question of if you do choose to blow the shofar on Shabbat, do you fulfill a mitzvah? Okay? If you choose to blow on Shabbat, do you fulfill a mitzvah? Okay? If we have to, we'll get back to the point that Rami wanted to deal with after you come back from a tiul, because that is a more universal question, which is, why do the rabbis sometimes forbid things because of Gzeira on Shabbat? And sometimes they allow us to take advantage of certain mitzvot that are Dilchei Shabbat, like Brit Milah. What is the difference between them? That question, at least, we can definitely justify doing after, even if we get to it after Rosh Hashanah, because the same question can be asked about Lulav, right? Because the Gzera of Rabbah is both on Shofar and on Lulav. So, you know, this is a more universal topic. There are many other topics within this Sugya. If you want to, you know, spend forever on this Sugya, I guess we could. I don't know if you want to, right? Things like, what counts as Yerushalayim for these purposes? What counts as a Beis Din for these purposes? Is it only Yavne or any place there's a Beis Din? What type of Beis Din? 23, 3, the High Court, right? You could go on forever in this Sugya. I don't really want to. I think, you know, it'd probably be better if we moved on to something else and didn't spend forever on this Sugya. But again, I'm open to doing, follow the direction that you guys want to. Okay, closing questions before I take a few minute break before Piske Corona. Okay, I'm hoping this was clear. Yeah, Adam, go.
This is, it's kind of unrelated, but in the beginning we were talking about not making requests on Shabbos, so
yes.
How does Mishnah Berurah fall into that?
Good, 100%. That is part of the question. So, it's like I said, it's a very big sugya. You know, it deserves its own treatment. That's really the question is if you paskin like the Bavli, as understood by Rav Sajagon, it's no problem, because we don't think it's usher to make bakasha. If you think it is usher, then it's really a problem. And if you notice, we really try to cheat when we say Misha Berach, right? Because what do we say in Misha Berach? Shabbat hi milizok, right? You're not really allowed to cry because it's Shabbat. But we're doing it anyways. That's not helpful. But that's what we say. That's literally what we say in the Misha Berach, right? Shabbat hi milizok. It is Shabbat, and therefore we are resting from taking requests. But nevertheless, we're making requests. Yes, it's hard. It's hard. You know, Rav Lichtenstein wrote a...
Before an insult.
What? Yes, exactly. It's like, that's exactly what it is. It's very hard. Rav Lichtenstein wrote a very, very long article on Tfilan Shabbat, which summarizes a lot. If I can find a copy of it online, I'll send it to you. If not, eventually I'll lend you a hard copy of it and you can read through. Right? He does a thorough treatment of this question of Tfilah on Shabbat, where he goes into some of these issues. He has at least 6 or 7 models that emerge from the Rishonim and the Achronim, at least. I'm trying not to overwhelm you, but I can always throw sources at you to read on your own time that you can overwhelm yourselves. I'm happy with that. You know, That's fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyways, so I hope that was clear and interesting in terms of developing different theories in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Again, there's a lot, we could go on this forever. I would rather not. I'd rather cover a few of the other little topics within the sugya. Andrew, I'll give you the last question for today.
Okay, thank you. So we said earlier that if on Shabbat you accidentally say two minchas, you say the first one and then you say the second one.
No, regular. That sugya is about a regular weekday. And that's always.
Are you allowed to finish the bracha or not if it's Shabbat? And then the Bavli says you are allowed to because it's fundamentally okay.
Yeah.
It's a bidyagai. Okay, so can you apply this to about Shema, about on Chatzot, that if you already finish Chatzot and pass Chatzot, that it's just fundamentally okay to say Shema until the morning, that's why you're allowed to...
Well, that's what Shimon and Gamaliel seems to say. The question is, would the Chachamim really agree, or would they say you don't fulfill the mitzvah? That's what we're going to see. We're going to see the question of what exactly goes on here. And because biblically, you should be right. The question is, once the rabbis forbid it, right, they say you stay before Chatzot, does that change things?
But what about the law of Bidyavad? Like, doesn't Bidyavad apply to any time there's a law that's fundamentally okay if you broke it?
Well, that's the question. Maybe, maybe not. And that's why I think it's a fascinating question. That's what I want to deal with you, right? Meaning, several of the, right, it's not clear that that's true. Some of the Rishonim seem to say, like, no. Once the rabbis say it's usur, even though biblically you're allowed to, they eviscerate your Kiyum HaMitzvah. I don't know how they do that. But we'll see. Again, I tried to keep to basic sources. I stuck away from the crazier sources, right? Like, there is, if I remember, an Orach Chaim in Parshat Korach that says that Chazal have power over your schar and olam haba based on hefker beit and hefker, and they can be mafker your reward in the world to come. There are such sources. I don't know what they mean, but they exist. I didn't put it on the source sheet, but it's there. I can show it to you. It really does exist. Surprisingly enough, it exists. I need a few minutes before Piskei Korona, so let's call it a day, and we'll pick up with the question of whether you fulfill the mitzvah if you actually blow the shofar on Shabbat. Obviously, some of that will depend on what we saw today. And the last few days, and whether you think it's usher to blow the shofar, or you just don't fulfill a mitzvah, and does it have any biblical resonance or not? Right, obviously, all that will be relevant. But we'll do that tomorrow. If that takes us 2 days, then fine. If we can get both topics in before you guys go on the teal, then matov. Okay, I'll see you guys. Whoever's coming to Piskei Rikaron, I'll see you in a few minutes. Okay.